This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Today, we'll learn about diversity and equity efforts at UW-Milwaukee as one of their top administrators prepares to retire. We'll tell you about some common COVID-19 scams to look out for, and composer Paul Williams talks about his work on Fortunate Sons, a musical about the Vietnam draft. We'll start with this. In 2015, transgender people were banned from serving in the military. At the time, Dr. Jesse Ehrenfeld was serving as a U.S. Navy Reserve medic in Afghanistan. He raised a question about the ban to then-Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter at a military town hall. It was the first step that led to the ban's repeal in 2016. But just a year later, the Trump administration reinstated the ban. The ban was once again repealed last month after President Biden took office. Ehrenfeld is now the director of the Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to talk about his work to improve healthcare in Wisconsin and begins by explaining why he decided to follow in his family's tradition of service.
There's sort of this long history. I'd always been kind of drawn to service in a variety of contexts, hence going into medicine. And I always thought to myself, why shouldn't our soldiers and service members and sailors have somebody like me who's well-trained, taking care of them on the front lines? And so at the end of residency, when I finished at Harvard, I decided to go ahead and become a reservist. And so that brought me into the Navy.
And you also entered the military while Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in place. Is that correct?
That's correct. I got my commission in 2008, and it was in effect, and it wasn't until 3 years later, 2011, that President Obama repealed the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy.
So 3 years, that's a long time, you know, and I know other service members have worked with it even longer, but how did that impact you and inform the advocacy work you do today?
You know, I had a lot of awkward moments. You know, I can remember being hit on by women. And that was difficult to manage because I couldn't sort of tell my side of things or be my authentic self. I had one person in my unit who kept sending me Facebook friend requests. And it became very awkward because I couldn't accept that because it would give him visibility into my identity as a gay man. And so, you know, as a medical officer, I found myself in a position to fare reasonably well in serving under that policy. I came, I did my work, certainly a lot easier than I think other folks had it, but definitely it had its moments.
Was there a point where it started to become clear that your professional identity would intersect with other parts of your life so much, especially being a gay man serving in the military?
Yeah, no, I've always felt a need to stand up for those who can't and various aspects of my life and community. That started, you know, in medical school when I worked on trying to improve, you know, LGBT health education, continued through residency and beyond, even to this day in my work here in Wisconsin.
So before we get to your work here in Wisconsin, I kind of want to go back to one of the many things that sparks and shapes your career today. But going back to 2015 with you in a room at Kandahar Airfield in Afghanistan, when you were able to question then Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter about his stance on transgender individuals serving in the military, which at the time they weren't allowed, at least openly, to serve. So what prompted you to ask that question during a period where, you know, it was still a big risk to basically take the mic on an open floor and voice this question, but also puts yourself in a vulnerable place, you know?
Yeah, so I was deployed in Afghanistan serving as a medical officer. And before that opportunity arose in February of 2015, I got a call from an Air Force colonel who said, I've got a patient I'm going to send to you. I said, no problem, doc, what's going on? And you know, we sort of discussed it. And he said, by the way, this patient is transgender. And I said, that's odd because there's a ban and the last place you'd expect to find a trans airman was deployed in Afghanistan. And yet an hour or so later, I met this individual, took care of them, became friendly with them, and ended up serving the remainder of my deployment alongside of them. And so a few months later, when the newly minted Secretary of Defense in his first week on the job dropped by for a kind of troop town hall. I was seated next to this person who literally had no voice, had no opportunity to stand up and ask about, serving as a trans person, because it would have outed him and been the end of his deployment and probably career. And so I remember turning to Logan and saying, if you could get up and ask the secretary any question, what would it be? And so that's what led to my standing up in front of the press pool and asking the new Secretary of Defense about open transgender service.
As I mentioned before, your question kind of sparked some action on the military side. And a year after you asked Secretary Carter that question, the ban was repealed. So, how does it feel to be that push that truly got the conversations going in the rooms where policy happens in order to make change?
I cried. I remember June 30th, 2016, when the secretary ended the ban. I was in the Pentagon that day as that announcement was made. And a few hours later, the then Secretary of the Army, Eric Fanning, promoted me to the rank of commander from lieutenant commander in his office. And it was an extraordinarily emotionally filled day to watch this really unfortunate policy finally come to an end that had really destroyed many careers and put the brakes on so many things that I knew were possible for our service members across the country.
Now, to go from such a momentous and joyous occasion to, in relatively recent history, that ban was repealed, and then we had to go back, take five steps back, and the Trump administration reinstated a trans military ban. So, what harm has been caused by that action? And do you think simply having a new administration now will help quickly restore transgender military service?
It's interesting. When the ban was repealed, I remember having lots of conversations with my shipmates about what does this mean? Because a lot of folks just don't really understand. They may not know transgender people. They may not have transgender friends or family members. And so I think when that policy was changed, it generated a lot of questions amongst the force. And I remember distinctly being with my unit and a sailor who I didn't know very well came up to me and he said, "You know what? I've got a transgender brother. And so I know we're going to be talking about this with the rest of the unit and other folks. And, I'd like to participate in those conversations because I think I have something to add." And here's somebody who I had kind of worked alongside a little bit, for some period of time and had never known that about them. They certainly didn't feel comfortable disclosing that. And yet, this is a person who was looked to as a stellar leader, fellow shipmate, and finally felt empowered to bring that forward. And I think a lot of folks had moments like that when that policy changed and the force started to work on implementation of the end of the ban.
Do you think that having it repealed so recently and then reinstated is the culture of the military just waiting for a change in policy, or do you see just even more lasting damage?
I think the fact that you had almost a year after the change, a reinstatement of the ban, and now 4 years roughly later, another re-repeal is definitely damaging. I think that, it's hard to turn the largest employer in the world, and that's the US military, 3.2 million people, I think, on a dime. I'm optimistic that this will be an important and lasting step forward. If you had looked at, the activity since the ban was reinstated, there were a number of legal actions that had been filed to try to reverse it. I know Congress obviously had looked at it. I had the opportunity to testify in Congress in 2019 on the issue. And I think that there was a pretty clear consensus amongst the professional military leadership that the reinstatement of the ban was a political decision, not one that was based in science or fact. President Biden on January 25th issued an executive order that has lifted the ban and couldn't be happier that the president has done that. It's an important step forward for so many reasons. One, there's roughly 15,000 transgender service members actively serving. So it has an immediate impact on their ability to contribute to the mission completely, authentically, without having to dance around these issues. But also, it's an important step forward for our country in terms of equality. Again, you've got the world's largest employer making a really important policy change that is a move towards inclusivity. And that has important ramifications when you think about how it becomes a model for the rest of the country as well as the world.
Currently, you are the new director of the Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment and a senior associate dean at the Medical College of Wisconsin School of Medicine. So, what drew you to bring your experience, your knowledge to Wisconsin?
Well, I was recruited into this role, and for me, it's a dream job to be at the helm of a statewide philanthropy that lives in an academic medical center that can leverage its resources to improve health at scale. And that's what we do. And I've got an incredible team of folks who are dedicated and committed to that mission, wonderful partnerships around the state. And we have more than 1,000 community partners in almost every county that work with us, that are funded by us, that we help to grow their capacity to do good work, and to help drive that forward to elevate the impact of the work was something that I just couldn't say no to.
Your work today involves making sure care is equitable. And in regard to improving care for LGBTQ people, what do you believe are the main areas that are either current protocols, lack of research, or best practices that are lacking on a national front? What are the main obstacles to care?
Yeah, so there are a couple of gaps. One is the access and coverage landscape that has changed markedly. Not every Medicare contractor or Medicaid agency has provided complete coverage. Most of the third-party payers have, but there are still gaps. That has changed markedly in the last 5 years. So that's helpful when the third-party payers are starting to provide coverage for services. There still is a huge training gap. And you know, the vast majority of the healthcare workforce went through medical school, nursing school, whatever school they went through, without really getting trained in issues around LGB or T care. That's starting to change. Most health profession schools have incorporated training into their curricula. That's starting to happen at the graduate medical education level, the residencies and fellowships that physicians go through after the fact. But there's still a gap. And that's why places like MCW have launched initiatives to bring comprehensive multidisciplinary care forward out into the community. But there are still huge, huge needs.
Now, when it comes to Wisconsin specifically, in your work here and what drew you here, where do you think Wisconsin stands when it comes to its ranking in offering equitable care?
Well, from a policy standpoint, the healthcare laws and policies are actually in a pretty good standpoint. The state Medicaid policy covers transition services for transgender individuals. The state health plan covers transgender inclusive care. So those are all great things. That being said, you know, there are still real gaps in terms of where people can go to get high quality comprehensive care. And you know, here in Milwaukee at MCW, we have patients who drive quite a distance to come and see us. Sometimes now it's a little bit easier with the virtual visits that we're able to provide through telemedicine. But you know, there are roughly 20,000 transgender individuals living in Wisconsin, and there's only one comprehensive multidisciplinary clinic anywhere in the state.
Well, Dr. Jesse Ehrenfeld, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your work and your valuable perspective.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Dr. Jesse Ehrenfeld is the director of the Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment and Senior Associate Dean at the Medical College of Wisconsin School of Medicine. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and you could find their full conversation at wuwm.com.